The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. 98 days till the World Cup. 108 days till Jungle Parrot nests on England crossbar in match against Costa Rica. 112 days till French players show locals how to really stage a mutiny. Yes, the countdown is on. We round up all the pre-copper news around the world. Who's on the plane? Who'll end up staying? And then move on to the weekend. There's FA Cup, Gunners, Everton, Arsenal hoping to finally take a trophy home this season, but he's running out of slow dances. And there's an intriguing weekend in the Premier League too, with only half the teams in action, but some whopping games. Chelsea, Spurs, Cardiff, Fulham. Ooh, posts, tweets and possibly more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hi everybody, yeah, it's an extra special Football Weekly Extra, etc. and all that. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi Barry. Simon Burnton.
Yeah.
Always extra special when you're here.
Well, it certainly is for me.
Good. And Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Fresh back from Wembley.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right, listeners. Internationals. Woo! Quite a clash, quite a fight of the scrap in front of the press box, Ian.
Yeah, that was probably the highlight of the night, which annoyingly was in the other press box to the one I was in.
So what happened?
I missed it all. Well, apparently there was an aging English football fan who may or may not have had a history for this kind of things, who took offence to the sight of a pleasant Dane and his jester hat-wearing child in the England area, and used quite abusive language to him. To which the Dane, in a moment that his son will probably remember forever with admiration, lamped aging English football supporter, and the stewards came in and they threw the English one out. So justice for all. Brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine if that was your, you know, you're there at the football with your dad, you're having a great time, someone causes trouble, and your dad lamps him and gets him kicked out. You're just, that's like dad of the year forever.
Top result for that, Dane, but the ones on the field didn't come away with such a striking performance type thing.
No, they're very poor, Denmark, last night. Very lacking in ambition. I mean, Morten Olsen, to give him credit afterwards, said that they had no intention of really crossing the halfway line or doing anything. They said we just didn't have the players. They didn't have Eriksen, obviously. He said that Bentner's just nowhere near fit enough to do this. He said he's got to get a new club, otherwise he can't play for Denmark. So,
Although arguably the worst performance of the night was you on Twitter talking about games being rendered meaningless by swathes of substitutions. People calling you out on that pretty quickly.
There's nothing wrong with swathes of substitutions.
All right.
I will fight that one.
Right. Barry, you saw half the game.
Yeah, I divided my time between the Republic of Ireland and Serbia and England, Denmark. So, again, not a very good game between England and Denmark. I think Raheem Sterling booked his place on the flight to Brazil. I don't think we're any closer on the great Shaw Cole to go as understudy to Leighton Baines debate.
That's one of my listeners' questions, there, actually. Shall I go listeners' questions?
Okay.
Here's what they want to know. Lewis Turner, is Wayne Rooney holding England back rather than helping them develop? Simon?
Well, there was certainly an improvement yesterday after his departure.
Ah.
Sturridge is the in-form English striker. And if that's the way it still is in the summer, then perhaps you have to prioritise playing Sturridge where he's most effective over playing Rooney where he's most effective.
Really? What about this from Nick Samuels? Do you think Ashley Cole will miss out on the World Cup? Baines stroke Shaw now ahead.
I don't think there's much in it between Shaw and Cole. I think Shaw is clearly a better player going forward. And I think if you're looking to the future, he's the obvious choice to bring. Ashley Cole's been a great servant for England. He's an excellent player, but he's not getting any younger. I think it's pretty fair to say England aren't going to win this World Cup.
Well, Barry, why did you say that? Why all this negativity?
They're not very good compared to many of the other teams that will be playing in it. And, yeah, Shaw is 18. Give him some big tournament experience. He's good enough to play if called upon, so he wouldn't, like, be wasting a seat on the plane or anything. And I would certainly bring him. I mean, there wasn't much in their perform, you know, difference between their performances last night. But I'd say Shaw's the obvious choice to bring. Interestingly, going back to was it Louise or Luis?
Well, I'm going with Luis.
Oh, Luis, his question. I was sort of faffing around with trying to come up with my first choice England 11 this morning.
That's Namish Mistry's question. So what would it be?
Well, there's no place for Wayne Rooney.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Ian?
I'd probably put him in.
Would you?
It's just, it's a firestorm if you don't, in that, because that's the thing people will look
surely
to
he
if
can,
you lose.
He can offer so much to the team in so many different positions.
Well, there's a good argument for playing him behind the striker, though. Mm-hmm. I take Jacob Steinberg's point on Twitter last night. He's not actually as good a number 10 as people make out. But because he's so positionally indisciplined, it's almost worth putting him in a role where him roaming about can't actually cause any trouble. Mm. Which is a terrible way to refer to one of the most gifted players of his generation. But you can generally get a good gauge on Rooney's mental state by what position of the field he's in. If he's in the penalty area, he's fit and focused and ready. If he's at right back, he's on borderline mental breakdown. He will just get frustrated and go places. And if he's your leading striker and he's suddenly popping up at right back, it compromises the whole team.
Who else would you play in the injured talisman role, though?
I would play Sturridge up front. I don't see the point of having a young striker in the best form of his life, and probably the best form he's ever going to be in,
right,
and going into the World Cup and playing him out on the wing. I don't really understand that. Rooney's only scored, I think, 2 league goals since Boxing Day, so I'd just like to know what it is he's doing that gets him priority.
We never got the rest of Barry's 11. Were there, I mean, save us the entire, were there any other surprises?
I'd have Sturridge up front,
yeah.
Maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain behind him, and
would Lallana be there?
Lallana, yeah, on the left, Sterling on the right.
Okay. Simon, any thoughts?
I think that if the England team was selected by popular vote, I wouldn't guarantee his place at this
point. Right, you presumably cleverly might be somewhat at risk as well in such a scenario.
Cleverly would be very unlikely.
Who are the poor people booing him before he's even as a substitute, they're booing
him? It is tough.
Miserable.
I mean, he is who he is. And can't be blamed for that. And the fact that he's shone on loan at Wigan, he has played well for periods at Manchester United. He's a decent Premier League player, and he should be. I don't know. And it did seem very extremely mean.
Yeah, I'll tell you what else was mean. There was a small pocket of people booing Danny Welbeck when he came on.
No.
How the hell can you hate Danny Welbeck? You tell me one thing about Danny Welbeck that's not just infinitely lovable. He's brilliant.
Infinitely or mildly.
Maybe mildly is a better word.
Lovable.
He's just hardworking, intelligent, good movement, always willing, always going for it. That's the kind of player I like. Can you boot? I can understand if you look at his goal-scoring record and say,
he's not quite good enough.
Yeah.
Well, the Wembley crowd have a long history of not really knowing what the hell they're on about. Like, they've booed Frank Lampard, who's gone on to excel.
We're in
booed
a pot
Peter
and
Crouch.
Kettle paradigm here.
Shearer got booed for a while as well.
Yeah, Shearer got booed. Hargreaves got booed.
Mm.
But then those people who are booing could possibly argue that it's their abuse that has spurred these players onto greater things. I somehow doubt it. But,
really? Okay. All right. Well, you say England aren't going to win the World Cup. It's worth noting, though, that only they and Costa Rica of their World Cup group actually managed a victory yesterday, as we move on to a proper journalistic-style roundup of what happened to England's rivals. In Brazil 2014, Costa Rica, they won 2-1 against Paraguay. Uruguay? Huh? Luis Suarez, Uruguay? Got held to a 1-1 draw by Austria. Austria.
And they didn't really qualify in any kind of convincing form, did they? They had that horrible dip where it looked like they wouldn't make it at all, and then bundled in through the back door.
Right. And the other team, of course, from the group are Italy, who lost 1-0 away in Madrid against the world champions.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
I saw a bit of that.
Did you?
Very empty stands. Very empty stands. I mean, Wembley was not full yesterday, but still, it was a friendly against a second-ranked nation.
Yeah.
We tend to just... the English are particularly... they'll buy anything that anyone tries to sell them. But I was surprised to see so many empty seats there. And I was also surprised to see Spain playing in a ridiculous black and fluorescent yellow...
That's their third strip, but it turned out to be quite appropriate because it was also the night in which they were bidding goodbye to Luis Aragonés,
So, you know, it was all kind of black. That kind of thing.
Apparently Brazil wore two different strips for their game. One they for did. The first half and Bizarrely. One for the second.
Mm. We'll come on to the Brazil a little bit later. Just to comment on the Spain-Italy game, 1-0 win. Pedro, very nicely worked goal.
Nicely worked goal. Yeah. Buffon let it go underneath him a bit. He only really needed to... He tried to... It was a low shot. If he'd stuck out a foot, he'd have just kicked it away. Tried to fall on it and it went underneath them.
Well, the Spanish press this morning regarding this as another lesson given to Italy. The Italians are frankly not that bothered, saying we knew Spain were better. Besides, they're a tournament team and they were playing without Chiellini wasn't there, De Rossi wasn't there, Pirlo wasn't there, Balotelli wasn't there, or Giuseppe Rossi as well. So, yeah, I'm not sure how much you would read into that. Talk about English people buying anything. Ed Stern is feeling a little bit smug this morning. He says, I went to Australia against Ecuador at Millwall last night. Brilliant. It ended 3-4. Australia, I think, was 3-0 up.
They were 3-0 up at half-time. Mm. And then I think Tim Cahill got two headers, as is customary, and then switched off in the second half, and Ecuador came back and beat them.
Well, the Aussie goalie got sent off as well.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, he did. And Oz Goli sent off scenes. Why follow England, says Ed Stern, who then goes on to ask, are there similar international friendly treats in Italian-stroke-German-stroke-Spanish cities? They're far more entertaining games. It's true, there's been a rash of these games, or a swathe, as Ian might say, of these friendlies. But I think probably living in Switzerland's the ideal place, especially if you fancy a bit of a Brazil, because they always seem to be playing their friendlies there. That brings us on rather neatly to Brazil,
who were playing in Soweto.
There you go.
Which is almost like Switzerland,
but it shares many of the initial continents. there were two things about this game. Three things about this game. One was the fact they changed shirts half time, a bit like Man United did at Southampton. Two, the fact that they won 5-0 with a glorious hat trick from Neymar. And they really were on sparkling form. I don't know what that says about them or what it says about South Africa, but yeah, well worth looking up on YouTube. And three is the fact that everyone's having a heartwarming thing about a young South African boy ran onto the pitch at the end of the game and made all sorts of hand gestures and then had his picture taken with Neymar and got held aloft. Why is that? Barry, am I an old curmudgeon?
I was warmly grinning as I watched the footage of this today. Now, and
pitch invasion is a pitch invasion.
The cynic inside me suggests it may have been some carefully orchestrated sort of photo op or PR op, but hopefully it wasn't. But yeah, he was about 3 years old or
what's he doing running onto the pitch?
He's clearly a hooligan in the making, and he ran on in his Africa shirt, and he was about to be led away by two very stern-looking gentlemen. And Neymar came over and sort of picked him up and brought him over, introduced him to his teammates, and they threw him up in the air, Luis sort of Aragonés style. And then Neymar posed for a picture with him, which was taken by David Luiz.
Mm.
And David Luiz seemed to be having great difficulty figuring out how to use the phone, because they were sort of hunkered down posing for the camera for a very long time.
A marvellously evocative report there, Barry. If Ben had just played in a couple of kind of vuvuzela noises under that bit, it would almost sound like you were reporting live from
Soweto. In a story that is in no way similar to the story you're not allowed to tell, I remember a colleague of mine in Dublin many, many, many years ago was reviewing a stand-up comedy gig at which Joe Brand performed, and he slated her. Said she was rubbish, the usual old feminist claptrap, went on about cake and periods and blah, blah, blah. And as luck would have it, his bad luck would have it, Joe Brand hadn't actually done the gig. She was ill or something, and somebody else had done it instead.
Oh, dear. Thanks, Barry. That's much better than my story anyway.
I don't think it is.
Simon.
Yeah, the other curious thing that Spain-Italy friendly was that Spain gave a debut to Diego Costa there. Atletico Madrid striker, and it was the second time in a year that he's made his international debut in a friendly against Italy, having made his Brazil debut in a friendly against Italy last year before switching.
That's a trivia question, isn't it? For you?
That's a quiz question of the future. That is, or even of the present. Ask it tonight.
He wasn't the only oriundo, if you like, on there, because of course Italy were giving a debut to Gabriel Paletta, who we were talking about, who's basically Argentine, but qualifies by dint of having whatever it is to take it takes to qualify these days, and was regarded as man of the match by the Italians. They thought he did very well. We mentioned him on Monday. I posited that he had the worst haircut in football. A lot of outraged listeners getting in touch. Evil Laundrier: I'm sorry, but James really needs to get his facts straight. The answer to the question, who has the worst hair in football, is Marouane Chamakh, old favourite there. Palacios is up there. So is Demichelis. Don't know about that.
I was Arturo very Vidal, unimpressed with Sergio Aguero's haircut on Sunday.
Why is that?
Cup final. It's like the stylist was blind or something. Or he's got a toupee on that isn't quite properly adjusted.
Right.
I mean, I've had the same boring haircut for, 40 years.
I don't mind.
I'm in no position to criticise anyone else for being in any way adventurous, but right. I can't do much with my hair because it just grows up and out in a sort of Phil Lynott style.
Well, mine did that as well, yeah. Ill-advised stylings, I think, are one thing. Certainly a couple of people posting with a broken bill. You must have a look at the appalling mullet sported by Real Salt Lake midfielder Sebastian Velasquez. He should be red carded simply for stepping on the pitch. It is unpleasant. And Christian FM4, do you remember Christian FM4?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Christian.
Our friend
FM4.
From Austria.
Yeah, indeed. He says Kevin Campbell of Red Bull Salzburg has the worst hair in football, and he does indeed link to some pretty damning evidence. But with Payet, it's more the fact that he hasn't gone for any kind of styling. He's balding and he's just left it long, like some hideous... I don't know if you remember those old from the Golden Age of comics, those Tales from the Crypt, and there'd be the hunchback, a bit like the guy in the Rocky Horror Show, if you like. It's that kind of a hairdo. And he's running around, and it gets slick with sweat.
I think the worst football hairdo I've ever seen was there used to be a Bulgarian midfielder called Trifon Ivanov.
Oh, yeah.
In the 80s, maybe early to mid-90s.
Coming over all Jonathan Wilson, Barry.
But he had sort of three different hairstyles.
Right.
Simultaneously, all of them terrible.
We haven't mentioned John Terry, speaking of multiple hairdos in one head. I'll do this as well. Mini hats. Maybe covering old ground. Surely Jovinho and Sanya deserve a mention for horrible Barnets indeed. With Chamakh in there, you're getting towards an Arsenal haircut 11, obviously. Seaman and his ponytail in goal. There you go. Anyway, we were talking about international football before.
So just two other amusing things to go in a roundup.
Or two amusing things.
Yeah. Sorry. Christian Benteke's miss.
Absolutely.
Ooh, yeah.
Belgium against Ivory Coast, Simon.
Yeah, the much-hyped Belgian team, and all was looking good. They were 1-0 up through Fellaini.
Is he still playing, Fellaini?
Yeah, he still exists. And then, I'm not sure exactly the build-up, but the ball was basically played on in the inside right and squared to Benteke, who was totally unmarked.
Who was begging for the goal, begging for the ball as well.
The goalkeeper was out of position, and it was a simple tap-in, which he tapped over.
Yeah. It was essentially like the Ronnie Rosenthal miss, except it made Ronnie Rosenthal look like he was laser-guided.
Right. If anything, he hit it too well, I thought, about Benteke's.
And then Ivory Coast came back from 2-0 down. Yeah. Didier Drogba came off the off the bench and roused them. That's how to play a friendly, England.
Yeah. Well, lots of excitement in the international world of friendly football this midweek. Scotland beating Poland. They're now five games unbeaten.
Yeah, lovely strike for that winning goal.
By Scott Brown.
Scott Brown, yeah. Really good strike.
And Wales beat Iceland with a huge performance from Gareth Bale. And in fact, all of the kind of Real Madrid BBC frontline did well. Bale had a stormer against, Iceland. And Benzema looked terrific for France. Mm. French press are cooing over him this morning. They beat Holland 2-0. How about that? And, of course, big Chris Ronaldo himself got two as Portugal beat Cameroon 5-1. He is now, etc., the leading international scorer for Portugal. Ireland, he ended up losing.
Yeah, lost 2-1. Came out of the traps, roaring out of the traps. Had a good goal disallowed from Wes Hoolihan. And then went a goal up and lost 2-1.
Mm.
And I think they ran out of steam in the last half hour. Miguel Delaney covered it for us, and he said you saw sort of the best of Martin O'Neill's management style, the kind they had at Celtic, high intensity, using the wings, pumping the ball along occasionally, and then you also saw the worst, which is sort of O'Neill during his time towards the end at Sunderland. So, but you know, as I say, friendlies.
Miss really. Robbie Keane, do you think?
I don't know.
Shaylon had two absolute sitters that he missed. He scored a lovely goal.
Yeah, he was apparently very angry afterwards.
Mm. All right.
Cyprus and Northern Ireland drew 0-0.
No, well, Cyprus
at a game where entry was free and it was still hardly anyone at it.
Really? Yeah. Well, there was a lot of football in Cyprus last night because, of course, Ukraine chose that as the venue amidst their current troubles to host USA in what turned out to be a stirring 2-0 victory for Ukraine. Magnificent stuff, and a bit of a worry that for Jurgen Klinsmann, but I don't know, it's all midweek friendlies. Any conclusions beyond the stuff we talked about for England that we can draw from the wide world of these international matches, Simon, Ian? No?
The only thing, in Hudson's defence, there was a concerted effort to play inventive football there. Then there might not have been the ability to do it or the conviction to believe that they could do it, but there was a lot of movement in the front three, and there were lots of supporting runs. And so while Hodgson has taken a little bit of a kicking in certain sections of the press, there is at least something there more than there was in 2012. In 2012, it was two banks of four and let's get out of this without getting thrashed. There is some intention there. I'm just not sure that the balance is there. But you never know. After 5 or 6 weeks with the players before the World Cup, they might be able to get some cohesion. But I think you can audibly hear me grasping at straws.
But also, the very fact that people are mooting dropping Rooney is indicative of a squad with quite a bit of attacking talent.
Mm.
But no one is mooting dropping any centre-backs, because if you're English... And
we haven't got any.
That's where the real issue is.
All right. Well, with that, we'll draw a line under the international fixtures and take a bit of a musical refreshment pause and then be back with FA Cup. Barry!
Yep.
Part two. Do you want to talk FA Cup? Because yeah, I do.
Why not?
All right. What about Arsenal-Everton? I tell you one thing about it. It could see the debut.
I'm lost for words.
Right, it could see the debut of Shellstrom. Yeah. Apparently he's back already.
Really?
Yeah. And what a crucial time for their January signing to arrive. Because am I right in calling this the last chance? I know we're in March, but it's the last chance for Arsenal, isn't it?
Well, it's a funny thing with Arsenal, because at the same time as people are saying Liverpool are in the title race, everyone's going, Arsenal are out of the title race, and they're actually on identical number of points.
Mm.
But you're right, there is... I mean, in the last four games, Arsenal have only won once in the league. And there's a very, very clear sense of, oh, God, it's all gone wrong again.
It's momentum, isn't it?
Mm. Mm. And this is the last competition they can realistically win, you'd
right.
have to say.
Because you don't see them coming back against Bayern Munich?
No. All right. No, I'm afraid not. I know they did last year, but I think that was more down to complacency. Complacency which I don't think will be repeated.
All right.
But this is a very dangerous game.
So now, if you take that position, the next question would be, given that the following match is against Bayern Munich, do you rest your players in this?
He will be...
And save it. Or do you just write off the Bayern game and go all out for broke?
He'll be criticised whatever he does.
Right.
Objectively, I think it probably would be better to just go for the FA Cup with this one. But if he does that, he'll be called a coward on the back pages. And I don't think he'll fancy that. So I think you'll get a kind of halfway house with maybe a couple of fringe players coming in. But it's going to be really tough. Everton are a very good side. They don't... What they had under David Moyes sometimes was a conservatism, particularly away from home.
Mm.
They'd look not to lose. They don't seem to have that. I was at Stamford Bridge when they were there, and they were there for the win. They weren't messing about just trying not to lose. So they'll be fully in Arsenal's face.
Wow.
Do you genuinely think Wenger would be bothered by being called a coward on the back pages? I can understand Tom Cleverley, who's a young lad, being upset with getting booed or bullying petitions or whatever. Arsene Wenger's been around the block. He's in his 60s. Surely he doesn't care.
He gets very spiky in press conferences, and understandably so. And he makes lots of little references to things that people have written or things that people will write. And you will go off and write your headlines, that kind of thing. I think he does read the paper. I don't know that if it affects him and leaves him lying awake at night, but he certainly reads it.
Mm. All right, Everton. Kevin Morales calling it their biggest game of the season.
Yeah, well, certainly, if you look at some of the other quarterfinals, the semi-final place, I mean, the FA Cup is there for them. So
those other games are Sheffield United against Charlton, Hull City against Sunderland and Man City against Wigan, which we'll come on to in a second. So what you're saying is if you get through this game, you stand a good chance of A, getting to the final and possibly even taking home the cup itself.
Yeah, I mean, the winner of this Arsenal-Everton game, obviously Manchester City is still in the draw, but there are three possible outcomes of that draw for the winners of the Arsenal-Everton game, and they'd fancy themselves against two of those, certainly. Yeah, it's clearly a massive game for Everton.
Right.
And, potential for a trophy for whoever wins that match.
Well Martinez, Roberto Martinez, will be welcoming back Lukaku, who, of course, scored the late winner against West Ham last weekend. And he's looking to become the only manager to win the FA Cup with two sides in consecutive seasons. And he could end up doing it against the same team he beat last year. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? But Man City, of course, in similar throwback to last season news, are facing the team that Martinez beat them with in the final last season, Wigan, this weekend, Barry.
Yes.
Is this a good time to be facing Man City, who will have had lots of players away on international duty and possibly will be feeling a little bit smug after their League Cup conquest on the weekend?
I suppose in so much as there's ever a good time to face Man City, if you're a mid-table championship side, then, yeah, as you say, they've had a lot of players away, they may be smug, they're may have been out celebrating and whatnot. Well, you're pointing furiously.
Yeah, and also, they might have one eye on their upcoming Champions League game.
They very may well have.
Way to Barcelona.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to mess with Pellegrini's mind.
If you're asking me to predict a Wigan win, I don't think they will win. But
they're serial winners. They're specialists in winning. They are, Wigan. Since Uwe Rosler went there, 9 of 14 victories.
They're in really good form,
yeah?
But they don't normally play Manchester City,
well,
to be
true.
Fair.
Hey, Pantelimon will be in goal. See, it all says Wigan victory.
Well, you say Wigan that, Pantelimon is a goalkeeper,
well, yeah.
You know.
Mind you, that goal from Sunderland on Sunday, I mean, we're talking about a man who makes Peter Crouch look small at a narrow angle. How did he not get anything on that Barini shot? And the man is all limbs. He should have been able to stop that. I'm not entirely convinced by Pantelimon.
Believe. Hashtag believe, Wigan. All right. What about, can you call for me these, Sheffield United Charlton, John Ashton's going to be there. He's not going to be at home watching telly and filing reports. He's going to be there.
Sheffield United are in brilliant form and will absolutely be the favourites. Mm. They're at home. Charlton are not playing well at all. Charlton's away form is particularly dismal. And Sheffield United, I think this is, they're gunning for their 9th successive win and their 6th successive clean sheet.
Wow.
And that is significant form.
Nicely done, Simon. What about Hull City against Sunderland? Sunderland could be back at Wembley with a win here.
I suppose it depends on how they react to last Sunday's defeat. Mm-hmm. I think if they play as well as they did last Sunday, there'd be more than a match for Hull, even though it's at the KC Stadium. But considering they've only played as well as they did last Sunday once this season, possibly twice.
They're just hitting form, Barry.
Well, I hope so. I'll be honest, I'm not too bothered about whether they win that game or not. I'd very much like them to get to the FA Cup final, but if I think Jonathan Wilson said on Monday, you know, this is a good game to get rid of your League Cup defeat hangover, if there is going to be one, and then try and concentrate on staying in the Premier League.
Right. Do you think that's a mood that'll be echoed by Gus Poyet and his staff?
I know. I'd say he'll want to win.
Right. Okay. Now,
I see as well, actually, Hull City's owners have reiterated their determination to change the name of the club to Hull Tigers, and have said that if they're not allowed, they will put the club up for sale.
Yeah. It's wrong, isn't it? Is it wrong? Or is it their club, Barry? Is it their club?
Well, you could argue both ways. Mm. He's the owner, he could do what he wants, and
that's generally your stance. I'm just wondering if you'd apply it to this case.
Well, what I take exception to is supporters who are quite happy to take an owner's money.
Mm.
But then any time he tries to instigate a change, they go up in arms.
Do they have any choice? Supporters don't have the choice to say, no, actually, don't buy the club. We won't have your money. We'd rather just muddle through ourselves.
Well, supporters tend to want to have their cake and eat it.
Well, we all do, Barry.
Yes, that's true. If they are genuine and sincere in their...
It's a bit rough giving you cake if you're not actually allowed to eat it. What's the point?
Well, you've made a career out of sitting in front of uneaten cake.
Yeah, that's very true, actually.
The question is...
How ironic.
Well, I mean, clearly, before you eat the cake, you have it.
Yes.
But once you've eaten it, do you still have it? I mean, now it no longer exists in its cake form.
But I think you have it in a very, very physical sense in that it is inside you.
Yes.
And possession being it's 9/10 of the law.
It is part of you.
No one can take
you
that
see
cake
if you
away.
You can in any way apply this to Hull against the Sunderland so that we don't have to chop it out.
I don't think I can, but I can go off on a wild tangent.
All right.
And say that whether it's right or wrong to rename them, I'd take issue with the fact that it will do any good.
Yeah.
Because the argument is that it will make them more appealing to an international audience. Mm-hmm. But I cannot for the life of me imagine a 10-year-old in China going, screw Man City, I'm supporting Hull.
Well, they've got a name, haven't they? They're Tigers. It's a kind of...
But would you really? I mean, you'd No disrespect to Hull, but if you caught them on Saturday, I think your enthusiasm would be dampened quite quickly.
I think there's a strong argument to be made that there are enough teams out there that are named after jungle beasts with really no relevance to their natural environment. I mean, Cincinnati Bengals would be one. And Hull City Tigers would just be another team with an American franchisee name. Whereas surely the thing that sells English football is the whole heritage, is the whole notion of this being where football all began. It's the tradition, it's that character, which other teams around the world struggle to replicate. And therefore, to throw that away for just another franchise Disney-esque name, I think is a bit silly.
But also, Tigers... they're pretty and stuff. They're a nice looking beast.
They're fierce, aren't they?
But they're endangered. There are hardly any of them left. They're not really doing very well in a kind of Darwinian
What
sense.
Animal do you think you
people
should go
like,
for?
People
cockroaches.
Like,
they're well, certainly not in any danger at all.
Absolutely, cockroaches would be a good choice.
Right.
Like, tigers get hunted all the time. Chinese herbal remedists like to make teas out of their penises. I'm not sure that it's necessarily the right animal to choose. And on an evolutionary sense, that Hull cockroaches would absolutely be a much stronger survivalist image for
right. Just to take you back, and I'm just thinking in terms of the gift shop here, to the what is this, tiger penis infusion?
Well, so I believe, I'm sure I've read things about
it. Wow, you heard of that, Barry?
No.
What effects does it have?
My knowledge of Chinese herbal remedies is limited,
I believe it's supposed to stiffen the resolve for a longer period of time.
You're speaking euphemistically, aren't you? Well,
I suppose you have to. It all depends. In a perfect world where football isn't money obsessed, then owners would be custodians of the club rather than trying to get as much money as possible out of them. But we don't live in a perfect world, and football is money obsessed.
Surely it's up to us, Barry, to make it a little bit more perfect every day rather than just hold up our hands.
Well, we can do that, and I've said before, the way for fans to get their way is to vote with their feet and not attend games, but they're strangely reluctant to do that, probably because they paid money for a season ticket and whatever, but that's a way around it.
Tell you what,
fans won't do that.
We're wrestling.
Unless they're in Cyprus watching Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Or not watching Northern Ireland.
Well, right.
Case,
yeah. Did that game actually take place, on a philosophical level?
Well, there were some hardy Northern Ireland fans there.
Well, okay, good. Let's paddle back to the shallow end, Dave.
Yeah.
Simon, where you can take us through the latest from the Championship right after this. Listeners, let me tell all of you out there in Podland about our latest Football Weekly adventure. The one where we go to Dublin, Barry.
Cue diddly idle music and references to pints of the black stuff.
There you go. Tick. 19th of March is a Wednesday. We'll be jumping aboard our private jet and touching down in Dublin for a very special evening of puns and punditry, it says here. I'm going to be there. James Horncastle, Raphael Honigstein. Barry, hometown hero Barry, you'll be making your emotional return to the old country to watch the second leg of Manchester United against Olympiacos and then doing a live Q&A. What could possibly go wrong? Now they sold out. They sold out the original venue, so they're going to a bigger one, which means...
the O2 Arena?
I don't know.
Park?
Yeah, probably.
The Aviva?
Anyway, so there's some more seats that, by popular demand, they've put extra seats... It's only €15, unless you're signed up to Guardian Extra membership, which means you get 10% off, which is €1.50. €13.50. Yeah. Oh, nice. All the links are on the usual Football Weekly page. That's Football Weekly Live in Dublin on Wednesday the 19th of March. Football Weekly Live in Dublin on Wednesday the 19th of March. Why did I repeat that? To be sure. That's Pretty Sir Ben's joke, which I've put in. And well done, Pretty Sir Ben, for that.
It's like, that reminds me of the old joke. Why did the Irishman wear two condoms?
Well, it's going to be to be sure, isn't it?
To be sure, to be sure.
Oh, yeah. Championship, Simon.
Yeah.
Boom. Leicester looking unstoppable on the top. Burnley in second place. Harry under huge pressure at QPR. Tell us more, Simon.
Well, QPR are in a bad run of form. It's what? 3 defeats, 2 draws in the last 5 games, and they're slipping away.
They're still in the playoff position, don't they?
They're still in the playoff position.
So it's crazy to talk about getting rid of Harry, isn't it?
I mean, it's certainly premature, particularly given the investment made in the squad. I mean, not that's ever stopped them in their last few managerial changes. But it's kind of interesting that Burnley have been in the top two pretty much all season, but everyone has been waiting for them to fade away. And in fact, it's QPR who are doing the fading at the moment. Leicester don't play this weekend, but are looking pretty reassured in reassuring. Well, Leicester don't play this weekend, but are looking pretty good for first place.
Mm.
I guess the interesting thing is Derby County, who's a Steve McLaren inspired renaissance. But kind of interesting, I mentioned earlier that the form that Sheffield United are in, the two great runs of form in the Championship and League One. One was inspired by the sacking of Nigel Clough, and one was inspired by his appointment.
Mm. Interesting.
But yeah, Steve McLaren keeps on keeping on at Derby County.
They're in third place, 5 points behind Burnley.
Yeah, they're in third place, but he's won 62.5% of his games at Derby, and they're rocketing up that table. When he took over, they were 12 points behind QPR, and now they are 4 points ahead of them.
Right.
Which half a season is a pretty decent turnaround.
All right. They've got a big game coming up against Forest, of course, where Billy Davis has been banned for 5 matches for, what, getting fruity with the referee, was it?
Yeah.
He used harsh language, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know, but Billy Davis is a small but a potentially angry man. He's a bit like, he's a bit like the footballing Joe Pesci.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting times, I think, to see whether Derby can keep going and catch up with Burnley. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Leicester. They haven't been in the Premier League since 2004, so it's 10 years now.
Yeah.
And this would be another exciting set of foreign owners for the Premier League to enjoy.
Yeah, we had a piece, David Conway wrote a piece last week in The Guardian about the potential fines that the Football League could levy on clubs that flout their financial fair play regulations and then get promoted to the Premier League. And certainly Leicester have been making very big losses, very big annual losses, and are set for another one this year. They've got an expensive squad and well-paid and large squad. And it's another set of foreign owners bankrolling the club. It'll be interesting to see if I know they're mounting a legal challenge against these regulations, but potentially many millions of pounds could be fined. They could be fined many, many millions of pounds next season as a result of their extreme investment in their squad.
So above and beyond the UEFA restrictions, the Football League itself is employing a similar criteria to measure debts.
Yeah, similar. They're not the Football League criteria aren't the same as the Premier League ones, which I think is the basis of the a legal challenge that Leicester and a couple of other clubs are mounting against it. But for Leicester, there's a very real threat that they'll get promoted and then we'll have a 8-figure fine levied against them.
It's a lot of figures.
Next season.
Yeah. I think Nottingham Forest are in similar trouble. But wouldn't it be worth it for the TV revenue they get?
Oh, sure. It would be worth it, but it would be a significant hit.
I'll take a bit of the gloss off those of that.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
Then I guess it is part of the same argument as the whole Tigers one.
Mm.
That
if you just let anyone buy any club, then they can do anything with it. And it kind of gets a bit complicated and awkward when you try to bind their hands, making the market so free in some ways, but then attempting to restrict it. Anyway, we'll see what happens with that legal challenges.
Certainly will. Speaking of legal challenges and that, looks like Massimo Cellina might not be buying Leeds after all.
Yeah.
He's being indicted for tax evasion, failing to pay tax on a luxury motor yacht from 2010. And this could effectively... he's pleading not guilty, hasten to add.
Yeah, his case is up on the 18th of March, which is after the Football League are due to meet to reach a decision on whether he should be allowed by the 70% of Leeds or whatever it is he's after. But so they will almost certainly delay their decision. Until after his court case. All this was a David Conn. Again, he's been busy, exclusive in The Guardian yesterday, or today, actually.
Oh, David Conn. Now, the weekend in the Premier League, only 5 games, but it's all about the quality, not the quantity. Hey, Ian.
Absolutely, and West Bromwich Albion and Manchester United might not be a place for quality, but it's certainly going to be a place for squeaky bottoms.
Right, West Brom famously won this at Old Trafford earlier in the season, and they also had that extraordinary 5-5 at the end of last season. Huh. Pepe Mel, though, still without a win since taking over 6 games ago, and they're in 17th place. They're only 1 point off the bottom 3. What are they going to drop into the bottom 3? Are they going to put David Moyes deeper into the pit of crisis?
Well, Moyes is quite fortunate because he appears to have found the one club in slightly more of a mess than his own, because Pepe Mel's position is apparently under threat already. He's lost his key ally, the man who had the ear of the chairman, and was acting as his translator on the pitch, has now left the club. His record, the man's only just got there, so you can't really criticise him too much, but his record isn't particularly good, just 4 draws and 2 defeats. He's very good at one-all draws, very good at substitutions and changing the game when it looks like it's getting away from him, less so at not allowing the game to
but
get away from him.
But the players have leaked the
place.
Fact that they're unhappy with the style of football that he's looking to impose.
Well, it's the weird thing that you have this very, very sensible football club right up until very recently, a very sensible football club that's been built to counter-attack, and now all of a sudden they've gone for a manager who's command of the English language isn't brilliant, whose familiarity of the English league isn't brilliant, and who likes a high pressing game. So taking the complete opposite approach to a squad built for something clearly in mind. And this isn't a criticism of Pepe Mel, who distinguished himself in Spain, of course, before having all of his players sold from underneath him. But it just seems a really illogical choice for a manager, and they seem a very troubled club. And this might be a very good place for Manchester United to go.
Oh, an interesting interview in the Scotsman this week, in the build up to their international fixture last night, with James Morrison, the West Bromwich player, where he said he thought that they would be better off if they hadn't sacked Clark. He said, "Does feel like a soap opera. It's been one thing after another with managers changing and people getting suspended," referring to Anelka, I suppose, with his Canel. Yeah, I mean, they're in a bit of turmoil. Their form is dismal. Oh, the players are already disgruntled with the new manager. I think that we can probably be confident that it won't be 5-5.
In other weekend fixture news, Crystal Palace hosting Saints. Full of England players, of course. Saints, Lallana impressing against Denmark, Luke Shaw.
I noticed also they had Southampton 4 players playing for England under-19s yesterday.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
Chelsea also had 4 players, but Chelsea and Southampton were making the 2 biggest contributions to that team.
All right, well, Palace down in 16th place. For all the good work done by Tony Pulis, they are far from out of the relegation battle, so this will be a big game for them. They've got Glenn Murray back, though. Well, it's a game, and it's out there. As is Norwich Stoke, which won't feature any Charlie Adam.
He's been suspended for 3 games for allowing Olivier Giroud to wriggle underneath him and then whack the sole of his boot with his shin, which a lot of Stoke City fans seem to think is very unfair. We were accused of being lazy by someone for having the audacity.
That's as far as I read, actually. What did they...
Apparently, our criticism of Stoke was lazy, they expected better, blah, 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 the usual.
Right.
Which I thought we were quite kind to Stoke on Monday's part.
Other people accused us of being too kind to Stoke.
Yeah, well, there you
damned
go.
If you do. And
but I think the pollster in question took exception to the fact that he was upset about the media silence over Arsene Wenger overseeing an Arsenal team that's accumulated 100 red cards in his tenure.
Hmm.
So I googled Arsene Wenger and 100 red cards, and the media silence is quite loud, to be honest. And when you boil it down, I think those 100 red cards, it's about one every 10 or 11 games. I haven't done the exact sums, but, you know, but say 50, 60 games a season. Mm. It's not exactly thuggery.
No. Okay. There's two games left. You've got Cardiff Fulham, which is absolutely massive, last against second last. And you've got Chelsea Spurs, first against fifth and trying to break still into the top four. Which Cardiff. Grabs you? Cardiff?
Yeah.
Cardiff it is.
Alarming, really, for poor Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. This was never going to be a very easy job, but his team selection and his tactical lineups are changing every single game. There was a back three against Tottenham and yet another throw of the dice to try and get something out of it, but it's just not happening for him at the moment, which is strange because I saw them against Aston Villa, which they drew, and was actually quite impressed with certain parts of their play. This is all set against the backdrop of the bonus from Vincent Tan that was apparently offered a multi-million pound bonus for the players if they avoided relegation, which was a great idea, but for one small flaw, which it's really, really against the rules.
Is it? Why is that?
Because you have to announce your bonuses and declare them at the beginning of the season.
Really?
You can't just go around throwing money at players willy-nilly. The bonus was only part of his speech. In the other part of it, he implored...
Is it world domination again?
It's the gloves. It's always the gloves. He implored his players to shoot more.
Oh, is there it? Back to that one, from their own half, no?
Well, he didn't specify from where,
okay.
But he did apparently tell them to shoot more. So that should sort it out.
Well, goals win your games.
Did he definitely say shoot?
I hope so. Mm. Otherwise, it'd be most unsanitary.
It would, wouldn't it? Interestingly, from Fulham's point of view, they lost at home to Fulham, and apparently Mitroglou is still not rated as fit by cheery, laughing Felix Magath, despite the fact that he played for Greece midweek. That's a curious one, isn't it?
It is a funny one. I mean, I don't know if that's true or if there's more to the story than meets the eye, because we do realise, or we have been made aware, that Felix Magath does have very exacting standards of fitness, or insist on them in his players at least. So, yeah, I don't know. He was clearly fit enough to be banging in hat-tricks in Greece earlier this season.
In defence of Magath, he was quite clear that leading the line for the best team in Greece by absolutely miles was going to be a more sedate task than clattering about running the lines for a relegated team, which he may well have a point on.
Hmm. All right, fair enough. Let's move on then. Barry, any?
No, nothing.
Okay. Right, Chelsea Spurs. Chelsea don't lose at home under Jose Mourinho.
This is where we have our annual Spurs Stamford Bridge jinx.
They've come close, Spurs, in recent years.
They have come close. There've been a couple of late turnarounds, but it remained February 1990 that they last lost at Stamford Bridge. John Bumstead, the goal scorer for Chelsea on that occasion.
Mm.
When Spurs last won at Stamford Bridge was not February 1990.
Right. Okay, but they're arriving this time. Chelsea famously don't have any centre-forwards, and Spurs have got a whole two of them because they've got Adebayor and now lethal Roberto Soldado.
Yeah.
Have some of that, Chelsea.
He was man of the match in their last match.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. And Adebayor scores fairly frequently against Chelsea. I think he's got a pretty hot scoring record.
I like the way this is heading from an upset point of view.
Yeah, what was lovely about Adebayor, and I'm not usually his biggest fan, but when Soldado scored, did you see him? He came running over and got all the team around him. It was like
Andros Townsend high-fiving the fans.
Yeah, it was the kind of thing a captain does. I wasn't really used to that from Adebayor.
We were kind of saying on Monday, I think it was in here anyway, that is that not slightly patronising?
Well, yeah.
No, not really. I think if you're looking for positives for a player whose mentality and conduct has been questioned by many, it was, you know, I thought it was good. I thought it was positive. Okay. I don't think that's patronising.
Chelsea, very much top of the league, of course, but they have been struggling a bit. They had the 0-0 with West Ham, at Stamford Bridge. Struggled a bit against, well, they lost at Stoke. Didn't look particularly awesome against Fulham.
They had 15 minutes against Fulham, really, didn't they?
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What do you think?
I think Chelsea will win.
All right, then.
Sorry.
Yeah. Tottenham have actually picked up 10 points from a possible 15 in their last league games, but they have been broadly crap in most of them. I don't see that they can get anything from Stamford Bridge.
It was 1-1 earlier in the season when they clashed. You remember the famous Mourinho-André Villas-Boas we're not friends derby, as it was known. It's going to be a fascinating tactical battle between these two touchline supremos, Mourinho and...
Tactics Tim.
Yep, Tactics Tim. Well, that's a game to watch out for. As I say, not so much quantity this weekend, but quality, because some fascinating clashes there. And I, for one, am very much looking forward to being back here on Monday morning to analyse the whole kit and caboodle.
What are you doing on Sunday night? Who's on?
Ah, thanks for asking, Barry. We are going to be bringing viewers, like-minded viewers. Yeah, like-minded viewers, Napoli-Roma, which is only the derby of the south, but it's also a huge game in Italy because it's second against third, or third indeed against second. But there'll also be all sorts of other delights, all the goals and stuff like that. Another big game in Italy this weekend is Fiorentina-Juventus, because Juve have only lost once this season, and it was 5-2 at Fiorentina. And Fiorentina regard this as their biggest game of the season. Well, any clash with Juve is their biggest game of the season. These two teams are also going to be meeting in an all-Italian... I'm not sure, are we up to quarterfinals in Europa League? Last 16, perhaps. Yeah. OK, anyway, so that's going to be one worth watching from, I think, 6:30 we're on earlier. That is, yeah. There'll be a paper review on Friday. Where would you be going this weekend, Barry?
I have a weekend off.
Lucky. What will you be?
FA Cup have, or the FA Cup means myself and Mr. Rushton have been jettisoned.
Oh.
Apparently we're not as important as it.
Ian McIntosh, where are you going this weekend?
I'm going to Arsenal Everton.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it.
Good for you. Good for you. And Simon?
I'm going to my niece's birthday party.
Hooray! How old will she be?
She will be 6.
Right.
Yeah.
Is she a regular listener?
She isn't, but she does go to football occasionally. She's been to
Barnet. Hang on, are you going in your bear costume?
No, I'm going uncostumed.
Oh.
I'm sorry. But
when was the last time you used your birthday bear costume?
I think that I used it at my son's 4th birthday party, but I've loaned it out to friends a couple of times. If you want to borrow it,
right?
I can bring it in, no problem
one
at all.
One size fits all, is it?
It is, yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you just clamber on in,
okay.
Stick the head on and off you go.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that's it then for today's pod. Many thanks to Ian, Simon and Barry and producer Ben. Have a super weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.